Good morning, everyone. Welcome to today's Free to Be Faithful webinar. I'm going to give you a couple of instructions before we get started. This is a listen-only webinar, and you can type your questions to the presenters in the chat box on the lower left corner of your screen. You can type in those questions at any time during the presentation. So to get started for today's webinar, I'd like to introduce our moderator, Tim Gagline. Tim is a good friend to the LCMS. He currently serves as a senior advisor to the president, as well as vice president for external relations at Focus on the Family in Washington, D.C. Previously, he worked as special assistant to President George W. Bush, and he is the author of the political memoir, The Man in the Middle, Faith and Politics in the George W. Bush Era. He's an active member of an LCMS church in the D.C. area and a really good friend of the LCMS and all of our efforts to develop a stronger voice in the public square. So I'd like to hand it over to Tim Gagline, and he will introduce the senator.
Barb, thank you and good morning, and welcome to our most recent Free to Be Faithful webinar. We have had a series of wonderful webinars across the last several months, and we have explored an enormously important number of public policy issues on marriage, on the issue of human life, conscience, religious liberty. We have talked at length about physician-assisted suicide. We have had wonderful guests, Ryan Anderson from the Heritage Foundation, and many, many guests. And it has been a great blessing and, frankly, a great series of very timely and very relevant seminars about the most urgent issues for Christians in the public square. And, of course, the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod has been playing a very active role in educating and communicating the centrality of all of these things as they relate to our faith. And we are truly honored this morning to be joined by Senator Mike Lee, who is the U.S. Senator from Utah. Senator Lee has emerged as an immediate leader in the areas, several areas, but especially in the area of what is constitutional. He has a brand new book. The book deserves to be a bestseller. It is an outstanding, outstanding book on the centrality of the Constitution and how the Constitution should order our way of life. And in fact, Senator Lee is going to be giving a major presentation on that book here in Washington, D.C., at the National Archives. And so we wish Senator Lee great success with that new book. But he has also emerged as a leader on the issue of religious liberty and the rights of conscience. And as one of the vice presidents at Focus on the Family, the president of Focus on the Family, Jim Daly, and I went to see Senator Lee and his staff on two occasions, most recently about a year ago. And we had a discussion preliminarily of what has become the First Amendment Defense Act, otherwise known as FADA, F-A-D-A, but the First Amendment Defense Act. Ryan Anderson has spoken about this in a recent webinar for the Free to Be Faithful group. Senator Lee, we welcome you to this webinar. We are very eager to hear from you both about the First Amendment Defense Act and why we as Lutheran Christians should be interested specifically in your legislation. And secondly, if you would share with us the context, why particularly is FADA important at this particular time in the public policy square? So we welcome you to our webinar, and we're eager to hear from you.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be with you. I appreciate the invitation and the opportunity to talk about the First Amendment Defense Act, a piece of legislation that is very important to me. This arose in the context of the Supreme Court's recent ruling in the Obergefell case, the decision requiring all states to redefine marriage. In that decision, the court reaffirmed that the religious liberty rights of all Americans is important, and we've got to maintain those rights, including the rights of those who advocate on behalf of a traditional view of marriage. We've got to respect those rights, recognizing that our country was built on principles of religious freedom. Now, as Justice Kennedy stated in the majority opinion in that case, quote, the First Amendment ensures that religious organizations and persons are given proper protection as they seek to teach the principles that are so fulfilling and so central to their lives and faiths and to their own deep aspirations to continue the family structure they've long revered. The same is true of those who oppose same-sex marriage for other reasons, close quote. The First Amendment Defense Act would basically put the force of federal law behind that quote, behind that statement from the Supreme Court's opinion in that decision. Under the First Amendment Defense Act, the federal government would be prohibited categorically from discriminating against covered individuals and institutions that define marriage as a union of one man and one woman. The federal government under this law would be prohibited from denying or making unavailable any federal grant, contract, license, certification, accreditation, tax exemption, or other similar status from an individual or a group based on a belief that marriage is an institution reserved for one man and one woman. So in that respect, it would simply preserve the status quo, ensuring that federal bureaucrats don't take discriminatory actions against individuals or groups thereof on the basis of their belief, of their religious belief in traditional marriage. And so we think this is really important. You know, it's interesting, a couple of years ago, after the Supreme Court issued another decision in a case called United States versus Windsor, a case involving the constitutionality of provisions of the Federal Defense of Marriage Act. The Supreme Court invalidated portions of that law. Shortly thereafter, President Obama tried to assure the American people that he was not going to force any church to perform a same-sex marriage against its teachings. And I thought at the time, well, that's great. That's something that shouldn't need to be said, but I hope that always will be the case. But in a sense, that statement somewhat missed the point in that the greater, more realistic threat of government coercion is likely to come, at least not initially, in the form of an order for a church to have to perform such a marriage, but is more likely to come in the form of some type of retaliatory or punitive action taken by the government against an individual or a group of individuals, either a church or otherwise, punishing that individual or that group for their religious belief that marriage is between a man and a woman. We want to make sure that this is not something that ever happens in this country, and that's why this legislation is so important. And I appreciate the opportunity to talk to you about it today.
Thank you so much, Senator Lee. Let me ask you a couple of questions, if I may, that have come in that are particularly relevant to the Missouri Senate as we think about this legislation. The first is, what is the history of tax exemption for churches and other nonprofit organizations? Were they exempted in the first place? And also, would loss of tax-exempt status by the LCMS, how would it directly affect our clergy and commission ministers' personal income taxes? This has become one of the issues that's not been discussed in the general media and buzz here in Washington, as you know, but out in real parishes, this is a very important topic. So we would welcome, from your perspective, a bit of the history of tax exemption as it relates to churches and nonprofits and their initial exemptions, and then, what is the potential impact? This is one of the primary reasons that Lutheran Christians are so interested and, and wanting to know more about the First Amendment Act that you've authored.
Well, the exemption that churches enjoy, the exemption from taxes, is as old as the ages. This dates back not only years, not only decades, but many centuries. as a result of a longstanding understanding that it's none of the government's business to interfere with the operations of a church. The power to tax is the power to destroy. And if we subject churches to taxes, that could cause a lot of problems. In many respects, this is something that dates back to the Magna Carta. And this year, we're celebrating the 800th anniversary of that particular law, which plays such an important role in our legal and constitutional traditions. And, you know, when you think about the fact that churches play such an important role, not only in the faith of the American people, but also in the ability of the American people to care for the poor and otherwise to provide for their needs, it would make little sense, separate and apart from longstanding history and tradition, separate and apart from fundamental principles of religious liberty. It just makes sense to exempt churches, given the amount of good that they do and given the amount of good that would be thwarted, the amount of good that could not be done if they were subject to taxation, as if they were a for-profit corporation. And so this would be catastrophic to so many churches and so many charitable organizations, including many charitable organizations that are run by churches or run by people of faith as faith-based institutions. We can't allow them to be subjected to unfair retaliatory treatment based on their religious beliefs, because this would put a lot of them out of business. This would make it difficult to impossible for a lot of our churches and our religious institutions to do good things. And and for some of these entities, it would be a devastating blow from which they would not recover.
Let me ask you as well, what would be the wisdom of state legislatures adopting legislation similar to FATA for their respective states? And in that context, we would really welcome knowing the timeline for your great legislation. What do you see happening specifically at a federal level for your legislation in the rest of this calendar year? What is the timeline? What do you anticipate about how it's going to unfurl and through the committee structure and potentially onto the floor of the Senate and the House? And then also, secondarily, this question of what about versions of your bill at the state level?
Okay, so let me address both of those questions. First, with respect to the advisability of corresponding state legislation, I would strongly encourage any state that is concerned about religious freedom to adopt a variation of this law. I think it's important for every state to do so. We've got power, of course, to determine what the federal government does, and that's why this bill is moving through Congress. But this would restrict only the operations of the federal government and not the governments of the states. But states could, and I believe should, move forward with their own legislation. My understanding is that a very similar protection has been put in place already in Louisiana. That one, I believe, was done by executive order. But I would hope that all states would come up with some type of legislation and put legislation on the books. We do hope to, with respect to your second question, get a hearing in the Judiciary Committee, of which I'm a member, sometime this fall. Within the next month or two, we'll be holding a hearing on the First Amendment Defense Act. That is the first step toward getting this passed. Once that hearing is complete, I would hope that we'd be able to start pushing for a possible markup. At that point, we could start hoping for floor action, but we have to take this one step at a time.
Great. And also, I should have asked, with regard to a House counterpart, do you have a House counterpart to your great legislation? Who is the author or principal authors of it, and how is it moving in the House as well?
Okay, great question. Yes, there is a House counterpart. The sponsor of that legislation is Representative Raul Labrador from Idaho. And that bill is doing really well. I believe they have about 140 or 150 co-sponsors for that legislation, and I'm pleased that it's doing well over there. I'm also told that the House is considering moving this along as quickly as possible. I don't know exactly what their timing will be, but I know they want to move on it.
One of the things that all of us have been following very closely, Senator Lee, is the jailing and the freedom for Kim Davis in Kentucky. How would this law protect a public servant such as Kim Davis? And I'm not putting you on the spot or asking you to get ahead of yourself, but I feel undoubtedly, and we all do, that you have followed this case very closely as well. We would welcome your view of it in light of your legislation.
Yeah, so it's important to point out that the First Amendment Defense Act expressly excludes from protection federal employees acting within the scope of their employment. And so this legislation, as I have drafted it and as I have revised it, wouldn't extend to Kim Davis, obviously, not only because she's not a federal employee, but also because that involves a question of an employee acting within the scope of their employment.
Got it. Let me ask something else, if I may, and I know that we want to be mindful of your time, and we know that you have two of your team members who are standing by to join us as well. But I want to ask a larger question, because in light of Obergefell, which you mentioned a moment ago, obviously we just you mentioned Kim Davis, you know, and the various sort of attacks on religious liberty and conscience. You know, there is this sense among American Christians that Obergefell and the legalization of same-sex marriage was kind of a culmination or the end of something. But it seems increasingly like it's not the end or the terminus of anything, Senator Lee. It seems to be just the next thing in this kind of constitutional and cultural arc that further and further constricts our religious liberty and conscience rights. In addition to being a wonderful U.S. senator, you're also a brilliant lawyer, and we would love to know your, not prognostication, but your view about where we're going in America on these cases. I mean, you know, in reality, we're going to have other cases of this nature, and we would, you know, from your vantage point, we would welcome your insight as a United States senator to tell us what you think is ahead of us in the landscape for religious liberty in America.
If we pass legislation like this, if we pass legislation like the First Amendment Defense Act, and we continue to defend existing protections in federal and state law, for example, the existing Federal Religious Freedom Restoration Act, then I think we will continue to be a nation that supports religious freedom. In other words, recent court rulings need not spell doom and gloom for religious freedom in America. Nonetheless, we have to recognize that there is work to be done. And there is a chill wind that blows, to the extent that we don't respond to that wind by putting in place and keeping in place adequate statutory protections for religious freedom. For the simple reason that as government gets bigger and bigger, as it spends more and more of the American people's money, as it arrogates more and more power to itself, and as our government, whether through court rulings or otherwise, starts to take public policy positions that are fundamentally at odds with longstanding biblical religious beliefs about important issues like marriage, those two things are going to intersect in a way that's very painful unless we've taken the adequate precautions to protect religious freedom. That's why this effort is so important, and that's why I'd like to call on all within the sound of my voice who agree with these principles to stand behind these efforts to protect religious freedom in America.
We know you have a tight schedule, so we're going to let you depart, and we'll defer to your two team members. But just before you do, Senator Lee, I have a final question and a quick one at that. In light of all of the wonderful information you've given us today, and you know, stressing that the LCMS is strictly nonpartisan, we are partisan to good public policy, but we are not partisan, Democrat or Republican, liberal or conservative. You know, as with you, we want the best thing for our great country. What is the way that in your view, Lutheran Christians should be involved when it comes to religious liberty and rights of conscience legislation? In other words, you know, if people have heard something today that they think is very important, and the Missouri Synod is a large synod, as you know, millions of members, the question is, what is the most effective thing that people can do to get the word out on an informational, educational basis about your legislation? How is it that we can help get the word out about the efforts and the things that you've outlined today about religious liberty?
You know, it's always helpful anytime people are willing to speak out about a particular issue, whether it's a piece of legislation moving through Congress or otherwise. If you like what you've heard today, if you'd like to support the religious the First Amendment Defense Act, please do so, and you can get more information from my website at lee.senate.gov. But if you'd like to speak out more about it, I'd encourage all within the sound of my voice to reach out to their senators and to their congressmen and to let them know that they support this. Feel free to talk about it on Twitter, Facebook, and other avenues of social media. It's important for us to get the word out that the American people are free, that the sons and daughters of the United States of America were meant to live in freedom, that in our worship of the Lord Jesus Christ, we demand to be free from retaliation by our government. Just as the Sabbath was made for man and not the man for Sabbath, the government was made by the people for their benefit, and the people were never meant to become slaves of sorts to a government that wants to interfere with their religious freedom. The more we can have people expressing these viewpoints and expressing their desire to see reforms like the First Amendment Defense Act put into law, the better off we're going to be, and the more we'll be able to put together a bipartisan coalition of senators and congressmen to get this thing passed.
Senator Mike Lee from Utah, we really appreciate your time today. We pray for you and for your great staff, especially for your family. We really appreciate what you do in the public square. We're going to defer to and welcome in two other members of your team. But thank you so much for being part of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod Free to Be Faithful webinar. We are very appreciative to you.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.
Let's go ahead and bring in, if we may, to talk about the First Amendment Defense Act and tax-exempt status for churches, Con Carroll, who is the communications director for Senator Lee, and also Leslie Ford, who is a legislative aide for religious liberty and has served so well at other important places in Washington, including the Heritage Foundation. We welcome both of you to our Free to Be Faithful webinar, and thank you so much for helping secure the senator this morning. We really appreciated that. Let me turn first, if I may, to Con. One of the major areas that has come up this morning among those who are joining us is this question of state protection, extending FATA protections to cover actions of state governments and state employees. And I know that that is not the scope of Senator Lee's legislation. And I know we've invited you to come talk about FATA. But I want to raise this issue with you, if I may, Con, because Christians serving in public office, you know, the nature of conscience protections in the DNA and in the marrow of states where we all live, in light of Kim Davis and in light of so many other issues. May I just ask, what is your view in that regard? And also, I guess at one point, potentially the expansion, not of FATA, but other future federal legislation, which would cover actions by state governments and public officials in the states, because it's becoming such a big issue there. We'd love to hear from you in this regard.
Sure. Well, as the senator mentioned, Governor Bobby Jindal did do pretty much a good example of FATA in Louisiana, but that was an executive order, so that only extends through his administration. So to the extent that legislatures and groups like yours can help influence legislatures to get something firmer on the books, that would definitely help. And, you know, this is an issue that will pop up over and over again You're seeing it, you know, not just when it comes to marriage, but when it comes to a slew of issues where nonprofits who've been serving the, you know, their communities for years are being forced by both federal and state governments to choose between serving their communities and renouncing some strong beliefs. So yes, this legislation is definitely needed on both the federal and state levels.
You know, Christians in America have followed very closely and participated, you know, deeply, especially among Missouri Synod Lutherans. I mean, we believe that the first duty, you know, as Christians is voting. And the turning out of good citizens, the creation, you know, of good citizens among our children, and being involved, and not being separated from the public square, but being active, and we are as a synod. What about the whole idea in that regard of going against conscience? This is one of the themes that comes up repeatedly. We encourage our young people in all of our synodical colleges and universities. We have the second largest parochial school system in the country. You have very active, wonderful pastors and church workers. We encourage them overwhelmingly to get involved in the public square, make a difference, you know, make your voice heard. And then at the same time, people wake up and they find that their brothers and sisters in Christ, you know, of other denominations or synod, you know, are placed in jail, or they're in their businesses, they're punished for refusing to, you know, be involved in a wedding as a florist or as a photographer or whatever. You know, how do we battle this ongoing you know, a view that somehow religious liberty and conscience can, in fact, now be punished in light of the wonderful comments that Senator Lee made this morning?
It's definitely something we have to stay engaged. You can't get discouraged. You know, the secular left has definitely been trying to push religious institutions out of the public square. It's something we saw even before Oberg fell. You know, when you look at the Boy Scouts and the ways they are trying to push churches out of involving in that, just in my local neighborhood, they have the schools trying to push Boy Scouts out of the local schools because of the organization's views on marriage. So it's something where you can't give up, and you do have to keep fighting, but. You also just have to keep stock of these episodes and keep stock of these examples so that you can tell a story. You can go back and tell people who don't think this is a problem that, yes, this is something that is really happening. There really are schools that their very existence is threatened by this problem. And when you have people like those bakers in Oregon who had their business taken away from them, when you have examples of schools who their very existence is threatened, when those incidences keep happening, then people who are in the kind of the moderate middle will have to realize that, yes, this is an issue. This isn't about people who are believe in traditional marriage being, you know, bigoted in some way. That this is actually just about people being allowed to help communities while also honoring their faith. Leslie, do you want to add anything?
Sure. I think also an important message going forward is to speak about the importance that tens of thousands of religious organizations and tens of millions of Americans hold, how they hold an irreplaceable position in our communities. I think very often faith-oriented citizens, they go about their work, they feed the homeless, they clothe the naked, they shelter people, they counsel people, and they give comfort to millions of Americans in need, but they don't draw a spotlight to themselves, and nor should they. But part of this battle is many Americans don't see the importance that faith-based organizations and religious citizens play in our communities. So it's very important to let people know the good work that faith-oriented Americans and, for instance, the parochial schools in the LCMS community, how they play an irreplaceable role in the community. No other school could come in and do the good work that they're doing.
By the way, we appreciate very much, Con, you making mention of the Boy Scouts of America and, Leslie, your mention of our a school system, parochial school system, because this is the Boy Scouts of America has emerged as a very important issue in our church, and the president of the Missouri Synod, Matt Harrison, has been very, very adroit, as has his team, in interacting with the Boy Scouts specifically for the religious liberty and conscience rights and issues that both of you raise. Leslie, let me turn to you too and dovetail on your last comment, if I may. There are a lot of questions with regard to whether a bill of this nature, if it were to be passed, if it were to pass the House. We heard that Senator Lee say it has over 140 co-sponsors in the House. That's remarkable. That's a great number. Let's say for a moment that it were to pass the House, it were to pass the Senate, and the bill would move forward. We have callers who are joining us this morning asking, wouldn't the president just automatically veto it? And and if we get to that point, would there be enough votes in the Senate to override an expected veto? I would love to hear your. We would love to hear your comments in that regard.
Yes, there's no really telling what President Obama would do on a piece of legislation like this. Like the senator mentioned, after the Windsor decision, President Obama talked about the importance of people of goodwill who see the issue of marriage differently than he did at that time. So there's no really telling what he'll do on a piece of legislation like this. But I think the important thing is the House and Senate should move on a piece of legislation like this. They should move to protect religious liberty. They should move to protect religious citizens and to put a marker out there for this is what religious liberty is. The government shouldn't be discriminating against people of faith or religious organizations because of their beliefs about marriage, which were the law of the land until 4 years ago. So I think that marker is very important no matter what happens in with a presidential veto or not.
And let me ask another question along that line, if I may, Leslie. If a congregation as a congregation, learn about the legislation that we've heard about today, and would say, this is really important to our life as a parish or a school or, a parish school, et cetera. I asked this of Senator Lee, but I really want to connect the faith and action part. What is the best way to help get the word out about this legislation, and especially what is the best way to learn its very specific impact on the Missouri Synod, on local parishes, schools, universities. In other words, I'm just trying to make this very parochial and local to what it is the members of the Missouri Synod, the way that we would become essentially educated about the bill and then help share with our fellow parishioners or neighbors or people in our community, whether they're Lutheran or not, about this legislation. What is the action item? How do we get the word out?
Well, I'll do a three-step plan. I think the first step to learning about the bill, you can go to lee.senate.gov. We have the finalized version of the bill up there, and it's a fairly short bill. It's about 6 pages, and it outlines pretty clearly what discrimination by the federal government looks like and outlines how this bill would prevent that discrimination. I think the second step is to contact your senator or your congressman, and this can be via email, this can be via phone, this can be in person if you're able to make it out to Washington, D.C. And when you're talking to your senator or your congressman, either via email or via phone, you can describe the importance of the faith in your community. You can describe how your parochial schools touch the people in your community and how it raises up the next generation of faith, and how the Obergefell decision, especially when the Solicitor General said that the nonprofit status of schools might be threatened, threatens your school personally or threatens your community personally. And then you can bring up the First Amendment Defense Act and say, this is the answer that we're looking for. And I encourage you to look up whether your senator or your representative is already a co-sponsor of the bill. And if they are, thank them. It's important that they hear that their constituents are supportive of the bill, that they're willing to go out on a limb for their constituents. And if they're not, encourage them to support the bill and ask them why they aren't.
Leslie, let me ask the same question to you and Khan in this regard. What might it look like if this bill were not passed and churches and schools did not have stronger First Amendment protection? You know, what is the impact we will see? What is the cost? In other words, you know, if the First Amendment Defense Act were not to be passed?
Yes. So, I mean, faith-based organizations, they surround us. Like I said, sometimes they can be invisible because people of faith aren't seeking the spotlight when they do good works. In the LCMS community, parochial schools, if they lost their nonprofit status, their property could be taxed, any donations that are given to the school could be taxed, and that's a huge hit to a nonprofit school. But also another tie could be accreditation, specifically at the university level, which I'm not sure that LCMS has the university level schools, but at the university level, if you lose accreditation, you can't qualify for any federal loans. And without federal loans, students aren't able to attend. So the financial ramifications of losing nonprofit status, of losing accreditation, of losing a license, not even being able to go into the business, they are devastating, as the senator said. So the consequences of a federal discrimination against any sort of faith-based organization is real.
Yeah, and if I could just add to that, I think, you know, when you talk to skeptical people about this bill, their first instinct is to say, oh, this is just a made-up problem. You know, this is just about religious organizations, people of faith, striking back in some way to get revenge for Obergefell or something. And it really isn't. This bill really does come from a realized fear that the federal government could do this. This is something that the Solicitor General of the United States, President Obama's own Solicitor General, said was a real possibility in front of the Supreme Court. And so when you start to look at real-world examples, like all these schools losing their tax status, then it hits home for people that this is real. People can be harmed by this. You know, according to the National Center of Education Statistics, there are roughly 29,000 religiously affiliated schools, elementary schools and preschools and high schools across the country. And there are 1,700 religiously affiliated colleges and universities. And it's not just the loans that would be affected. If you don't have an accreditation, then you can't transfer. If you graduate from, for example, Hillsdale College, which has traditional beliefs, and you try to apply to any grad school, your resume is invalid if you don't have this accreditation. So, you know, this is not necessarily about loans or the rest of it. This is everyday stuff. You know, this morning there was an article in the Washington Post about a Catholic hospital that did not want to perform a sterilization service on a patient who was there to give birth. And people are going to now try to either force these Catholic hospitals to perform these sterilizations or cut them off from Medicaid or any type of Obamacare funding. And this is an example, like the senator said, it's going to be spread from schools to hospitals. And as long as government is as big as it is, it's going to touch more and more areas of our life.
Would this have any impact, this legislation, on the revocation of Pell Grants from religious schools?
Absolutely, absolutely. Pell Grants are a federal program. A future Secretary of Education could very easily say that no school that believes in traditional vision of marriage is eligible to receive Pell Grant funds. That's absolutely a real concern.
We want to be mindful of your time, so let me just ask one last question of both of you, if I may. Both of you have worked so well in the public square as people of faith. Is your view hopeful about where we're going as a country, culture, civilization? Are you feeling despair? I think that we would benefit from hearing both of you as Senate staffers and what it is you think about the way that we're going.
I'm definitely hopeful. I think when you look at the direction of at least the Republican Party, you see that it is definitely going in a more conservative direction. We have a great number of freshman senators here. I think the party is moving the right way. I think the country is moving in the right way. I think they had a flirtation with a progressive moment over the last 8 years. But I do think that Americans are becoming more in touch with what matters, and that the foundational religious faith and value is very important and is very important to their lives. So I do think that you'll see a revival of that.
Great. Leslie, are you hopeful?
Yes, I'm definitely also hopeful. I think that we're coming into an era where we're looking for mutual tolerance, and I hope both sides are looking for mutual tolerance, where we can live with one another and be kind to one another and respect each other's beliefs. And I think the First Amendment Defense Act leads us directly to that mutual tolerance and that mutual respect.
Thank you very much. What a wonderful note to close on. You know, the heritage of Lutheran higher education through the Concordia University system and our schools and so forth, you know, really is remarkable, and it's very important to all of us as Lutheran Christians. And we appreciate you, Con Carroll, and you, Leslie Ford, for the great work that you do as you know, public servants. We appreciate Senator Lee and this very excellent legislation. We appreciate your advice and counsel about getting the word out. And above all, we appreciate you taking time this morning to talk with us about the First Amendment Defense Act, which people can learn more about by going to Senator Mike Lee of Utah's website. We appreciate that very much. And Con and Leslie, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank
you.
Thank you,
Jim.
Thank you. Be of good cheer. We thank you all for being a part of our Free to Be Faithful webinar. You can read the Senate bill that was mentioned on this webinar, you know, directly from Senator Lee's website, and you can get plenty of information there. And of course, on our Free to Be Faithful website, we are eager for you to tap into that and to get as much information as you may on this topic and a number of other things in the public square. So in behalf of all of us and the Free to Be Faithful Working Group, I'm Tim Gagline, and I appreciate you joining us. And I'm happy at this point to turn it back to Barb Below, who's an assistant to the president of the Missouri Senate, Matt Harrison. And Barb, thanking you for all that you and all of your team have done to arrange today's webinar and all of the work that we've done together.
Yes, thank you, Tim, and thank you, Senator Lee and Con and Leslie. This webinar will be posted on our website for you to review in the archives, probably within the next day or two, and you can find that at lcms.org/free-to-be-faithful. So I encourage you to check out that website for this webinar and a lot of other information that will be available to you about religious liberty. Again, that's lcms.org/free-to-be-faithful. Thanks very much, everyone, for participating. God bless on the rest of your day.